What's up, Level Up Nation? Welcome to episode 113 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news, brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined by the king of the Iron Division. No, not Core JJ, but the king of the courtside, Joey. What's up, buddy?
Ha ha ha. Very, very funny. Pick on the kid who hasn't played a ranked match in League in, what, 8 months?
You know what? As far as I'm concerned, I ended the season ahead of you. So that is a win in my book, considering our fantasy football league. Side note, I'm not doing so well in. So, I'm going to take my wins where I can.
Thank you, Daddy Dragon, for the carry there.
Yeah, there is. Thanks, Clue. Nation, head on over to Twitter. Give us a follow. Find Joey at Courtside King. Follow me as well at Fiasco if you're watching live here on Twitch. Welcome to the stream. Those are the awesome handles you see below our mugshots on stream. If you are listening on the podcast later on, welcome as well. You'll find those handles in the show notes below. Nation, it's another Overwatch event, which means Jeff, aka Daddy Kaplan, is blessing us with another Winter Wonderland event. Joey, it's time to brush off your trigger finger and patch your Overwatch client. We got some skins to get. But aside from Overwatch, what else are we talking about this week on episode 113?
John, the trigger finger is ready to go.
Oh my.
Other than that, though, we are talking about cryptocurrency and gaming. We are talking Activision with a big discount coming out. CSGO joining into the mix of Battle Royales. We have Fortnite developer Epic putting out their own game store and much more.
All right. So we have another action-packed week here for you on the Level Up Podcast. But Joey, we can't even touch any of these topics until we have our drink of choice. It is that time-honored tradition passed down from generation to generation. I think we're on 15 different generations by now. For all the way from episode 1 to 113, Joey, I need your 113th beverage, please.
John, like last week, or maybe 2 weeks ago, I'm going Bitburger again. I have a few more of these to go. I'm really enjoying it. German beers just seem to be the way to go outside of that one Korean beer cloud.
And the fun fact is that German beer cloud, which I happen to be drinking this week again as well, is actually a German style beer. So you can't really beat it. Germans make amazing beer, and the Koreans put their own little twist on it and make a great drink called cloud. So you have Bitburger, I have cloud. Joey, we have an amazing podcast to get right into, so let's waste no more time. Let's jump right into gaming and esports news. Let's go.
As is traditions after traditions, we are kicking it off with roster, industry acquisitions, and departures. Sticking it with a departure at the beginning, Fnatic will not be renewing their Paladins roster for Season 2. Both the players and the org are parting on good terms, though. John, if you ask me, this is what we have seen Fnatic and other big orgs do before. They join a new up-and-coming game to see how the scene goes. Fnatic won. I think they were world championships, or... I'm choking on myself over here. I think they were world champions in Season 1. They did extremely well. The roster came out fighting. If they did not finish first in every tournament, they were definitely up there. This, to me, is just saying, hey, Paladins, we don't think it's going to work out.
Yeah, and it's no knock on the players or Fnatic as an organization. It's just one of those games that had a lot of hype when it came out. There was a lot of support, a lot of fandom, but it kind of plateaued a little bit. It maybe dropped off just a little bit, too. It never really reached the potential a lot of people thought Paladins would get to, struggling against some other major tier one, almost immortal titles like League of Legends or Dota. So Paladins really did struggle, but it's not a knock against players or Fnatic. You want to take that chance because if it is the next big thing, you don't want to miss out on it. So it is unfortunate that Fnatic is not renewing their roster. But these players, if they do want to stick within the scene, I'm pretty sure there's other organizations, maybe not as high tier as a Fnatic out there, but maybe a mid-tier to a low mid-tier, who's looking to maybe expand into something different. Paladins is still going strong, so let's wait and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing here is a lot of these teams that decided to join Paladins were teams and orgs that did not get into Overwatch League, whether it be by their own choice or the fact that their application was not accepted. Paladins almost became that B tier for people looking for an Overwatch type of game. In this case, it just did not pay off for one of the bigger orgs that potentially could have got into Overwatch League. Simplicity has added a Heroes of the Storm roster. We have Goku, Buds, This Justing, Tomster, and Draded onto that roster. Heroes of the Storm is one of those games we're uncertain of for what it's going to look like competitively next year. They have had a few casters move to different games, and we have not heard anything about what the scene is going to be like for the HGC next year. This, to me, is a bit concerning. I like the idea of adding Heroes of the Storm rosters, especially if you can't afford League of Legends at the rate that it is currently going for. At the same point, with so much uncertainty about the Heroes Pro scene moving forward into next year, this is a bit of a risky move from Simplicity.
Yeah, and Heroes of the Storm is unique in the sense of esports because I would argue the Heroes of the Dorm series, their collegiate level, is a bigger deal than their pro scene. It just feels like whenever Heroes of the Dorm comes around again, there's all the hype around that, whether it's because, you know, you're a fan of a certain college or whatnot. That's where it feels all the hype and all the popularity and all the viewers want to go. It's to that collegiate scene, which is awesome, but that pro scene instead really does suffer because of it. I would like to see some happy medium between the two where we can have a thriving pro scene and a thriving collegiate scene in Heroes of the Dorm and really take Heroes of the Storm to that next level. It's very unique from the other MOBAs we have out there. It's not a Dota. It's not a League of Legends. It is very unique with the different objectives based upon what map you're playing on. It's very, very unique and has a place. It just needs to find a way to get into that spot where it's needed and then blossom from there. So you hit the nail right on the head. There is a lot of questions around the pro scene here, and that's something they're going to have to figure out. But it's good to see Simplicity making this move into the Heroes of the Storm, because that's at least going to give them the signal that, yes, organizations are still interested in the pro scene, and yes, there's a chance that we can still grow this into something bigger.
And you have so many huge name orgs already in the scene. I think for me, the biggest issue with Heroes of the Storm is that wow moment. When you look at League of Legends, when you look at Dota 2, there are so many outplay moments available. Heroes of the Storm is more team-based, whether it be getting an objective here, whether it be getting an objective there. But because there are so many objectives on the map and it can all be played through team play, you don't necessarily see all those exciting 1v1s or those crazy team fights that you might see more often in League of Legends because there's only a few objectives to fight over. So for me, how can Heroes find that wow moment? How can they make it just go from... So someone like me, for example, I love the higher level play. I like watching the macro strategy evolve. Because of that, I've started to watch more Heroes of the Storm and play more Heroes of the Storm. But if I look at someone casual, if I look at someone who just likes those wow moments, why are they going to watch Heroes of the Storm? You get some team fights here, you get some team fights there, and it's great, but there's so much soaking of XP in the lanes or getting camps, and player on environment is not exactly exciting to watch, and I think that's why we see Heroes suffer more. Team Vitality has added Zuper as their new CSGO manager and XTQZZZ as their new CSGO coach. I think he might need a name change. That's going to be hard to announce on stage. But overall, I think these are good moves. Team Vitality showing once again they are investing into newer scenes. CSGO obviously not being a newer scene overall, but it is newer for Team Vitality. This is Team Vitality finally branching out. We see them in Rocket League. We see them in League of Legends. But now finally making more moves in other games, and CSGO is a very good one that they're investing more and more in. Last but not least, G2 has added Kieran as their new Call of Duty manager. John, we've said it before, Call of Duty is a growing scene. There's more and more money going into it. This is G2, a top-tier organization, making a move to continue investing in the scene and to build their team up.
Yeah, it's really cool because Call of Duty was one of those titles, and we've said it before, so we'll say it again. It really plateaued early at a very low level. Call of Duty really kind of struggled to get up to its true potential. But with its latest game that came out and the hype around it, it's growing. And it's probably one of the fastest growing esports out there just because of the hype and the popularity around it. And the fact that everyone's really playing it right now. So you really can't beat that. And that's awesome. And it's great to see a high tier organization like G2 Esports going further into this title, this amazing esport, this growing game that's really taking the world by storm with just all the positive reviews and everything that has been getting. I mean, a lot of people are calling this the best Call of Duty game probably in the past decade. You know, we've had other, you know, Black Ops titles that had people scratching their heads. They've kind of gone away from the World War II kind of thing. So now they're kind of doing their own modern title, twist on it without that little sci-fi aspect to it. And it's really working. It's really working with their Battle Royale mode. It's really working with everything they have. And it's created that hype, that draw that Call of Duty used to have. And it's translating to esports now, which is awesome for that title.
Yeah, I think one of the things that held Call of Duty back in its earlier days as far as an esport title was the accessibility of it. When you look at Twitch was not really prominent back then. When I was playing around Modern Warfare, so Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare had just come out on Xbox 360 was my platform of choice. When you're playing on it, you finally have that ability to play multiplayer on something that, one, does not lag as bad as it did before, and two, you get more and more of that move from not only posting YouTube montages, but finally streaming on Twitch. I think as that's become more and more prominent, console gaming has as well.
Stay on Twitch and YouTube. Don't make that jump to Facebook like some other titles did. It's not worth it.
But it's just crazy, John, to think like 20 years ago, it was all montages.
Yeah.
It was everyone just recording these clips, and that's how they got known. Now you can build an audience. You can build a fan base as an individual player just by Twitch. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's like Call of Duty set the groundwork for gaming content on YouTube, and then people got noticed, and then all of a sudden, you know, esports comes around, and now you have Twitch, and now you can live stream all your stuff. You don't have to make montages, even though it's still a really big part of building your brand is creating montages now out of your live streams. But Call of Duty was really one of the first titles that you could really build your brand on by uploading those montages on YouTube. So it's really kind of cool to see everything grow to where it's at right now.
Speaking of growth and something we would have never talked about a while back, moving into partnerships, Gfinity Esports Australia has partnered with Incent to bring cryptocurrency rewards to the Elite Series. John, cryptocurrency continues to grow, whether it be up or down. It just continues to grow one way or another. So this is going to be interesting. It's pretty much going to be a broadcast rewards platform. So as you watch Gfinity Esports in Australia, you're going to be bringing in rewards just by watching. We've seen this similarly with other scenes. We spoke about Heroes of the Storm already. They are one of those scenes that gives rewards for watching on Twitch to try to bring up their viewer count. Gfinity here, it's simple. This is coming from Gfinity Elite's own website. You're going to be rewarded for doing what you love. All you need to do is sign up for Incent, tune into the Elite Series this season to catch unique drop codes displayed throughout the broadcast, then enter that code into the website and be rewarded with Incent. So just by watching, you have the ability to buy into this cryptocurrency. I think this is a good move overall, John. Cryptocurrency is hot. If you put cryptocurrency in a Twitter bio, it feels like people just follow you just to see what you're doing. When you're coming in and looking as a viewer here, this is another way to draw people in. Yeah, you might not be drawing them into the sport themselves or the esport here, but overall, I think more viewers are going to help possibly increase the overall revenue of the stream, as well as it could draw in some new fans as well.
So something unique here real quick. Now, I agree with you. The whole cryptocurrency aspect to this is really unique, and I'm not necessarily sold on it. Just an idea real quick. I pulled up my Robinhood app, which is this, an app that you can do online trading for, that is currently tracking Bitcoin. Now, a year ago, Bitcoin was well over $15,000 per coin. Okay, this is the one. If you're watching live on Twitch, you can see this. If not, I'll explain on the podcast later. Okay, so if you're looking at that, if it can focus here, it's probably not. So what I'm going to do is tell you that right now, Bitcoin is currently sitting at $3,399 from $15,000, not even like just a little over a year ago. That's how far it's dropped. That's how volatile cryptocurrency is. So, and really, there's been no other cryptocurrency to come anywhere close to what Bitcoin has done. A couple of the currencies have gotten to a couple $100 per coin of whatever version of cryptocurrency they have, but nothing has really had the success that Bitcoin had. So it's going to be interesting to see how this is going to work out by rewarding cryptocurrency to viewers and to people tuning in and just being involved in this whole thing. Because at the end of the day, it's like would you technically be watering it down? Wouldn't you be just dishing it out to everyone, which would hurt the currency? It's almost like voluntary inflation, if you will. Where when you have it limited, see, we're going into finances now, and this is totally not esports, but they're bringing it up. But you know, there's inflation and everything else that goes into it, and then you devalue the price of the coin. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I'm gonna stop ranting on it from there. Cryptocurrency is very interesting, bringing that into an esport in a reward tier system. It's unique. I like it. I hope it works out. Not 100% sold on it. But I will go ahead and sit back and watch what happens.
And you might even tune into Gfinity to get some yourself.
I mean, I might give me another $3 in my portfolio. I'd be happy with that. But at the end of the day, I'm not looking for it to, you know, turn into $15,000 and then plummet down to $3,000 a year later.
Yeah, I really don't know what the cryptocurrency scene is like in Australia either. So this could be different compared to what we're comparing to it over here. Obviously, cryptocurrency does its own thing worldwide because of it being crypto. At the same point, you got to look at the individual scenes, and maybe this one does perform a little bit better in the Australian scene. Moving into other news, Activision announces that they will now be offering Call of Duty Black Ops 4 multiplayer and Blackout Battle Royale mode as its own product. This is available now for $30 on PC through Battle.net.
Okay, so as its own product, does that mean that we're going to have to download a separate client now to play this game? Are we not going to be able to launch Battle.net and play it anymore?
Oh, no, it's still through Battle.net.
Okay.
It's pretty much saying instead of paying for the whole game, you can now pay $30 just to get the
You're
two popular
break
modes.
It up. Got it. Okay, that makes a little bit more sense. I'm sitting here going like, that was such a great move putting on Battle.net. Now you're going to take it away? You know, look here, Blizzard Activision. We're gonna hyphenate your name here. I see what you're doing. I like this. It's a smart move because at the end of the day, people want to play Battle Royale and might not necessarily want the other game modes. So it makes complete sense not to force people to buy a $60 game when they only want to play Battle Royale. So it makes sense.
I mean, the other thing is, does it even have a campaign on that game?
No.
Or do they leave it off for that one?
And it kills me because I love a good campaign, especially in Call of Duty, that, you know, let's turn back the clock here a little bit. Back when the Call of Duty games were World War II based, they had some amazing storylines that they put a lot of time and effort and research into, and it was like a history lesson as you were playing. And for people who may not like studying history, it was a cool, unique, alternative way of learning about a very important era in human society that took place in the 30s and 40s. So it makes sense. And I wish they had a story mode because, I don't know, like personally for me, I like lore. I like story modes. I like playing through whatever story. It's just, I don't know. But, you know, PvP is really the king, is really the thing that brings people to these games nowadays. Not necessarily story modes. And let's be honest, the story modes in the past 5 years in a lot of games have been cut so short because PvP has been the focus. You know, you maybe have 3-4 hours of story mode content where you used to have days worth of story mode content or 22 plus hours worth of story mode content. Now it's like, okay, you do like 4 levels and you're done. Now you go play PvP. So, you know, I guess that's just the way gaming's been trending.
I mean, if you think of it, bread and butter is multiplayer. Where are you going to get people to spend more money after the story? It's all multiplayer. And that's why so many multiplayer or games with multiplayer aspects lean right toward that. When you have something like, let's say Tomb Raider, for example, that's going to be a story-based game with multiplayer on the side. Something like Call of Duty is all multiplayer. They make all of their money in multiplayer. Same with Fortnite, a free-to-play game, and they're making billions. I mean, so many games just lean toward multiplayer now. But the thing here, John, so if you said it was $60 main, right? $60 is a flat cost for the whole game?
Yeah, for the whole game.
So if I'm taking out the multiplayer and the Battle Royale part and adding them for $30, what am I getting for the other $30? Just zombies?
Yeah, pretty much. That's really the only PvE you have.
I see. That's where I think this deal goes bad, if you ask me. Like, why would I even spend the other $30 then? It doesn't make any sense anymore.
It doesn't. And, you know, they've kind of tweaked the zombies up so much that it doesn't... You can manipulate zombies so much. It's so customizable any way you really want to do it in the new Call of Duty. But you're right. When you break it up like this for the PvP versus the whole game, including the zombies, it's really not worth paying the other $30. Really, the way to go here is to pay $30. You get the PvP and you get the Battle Royale mode. That's what they're banking their money on. They're pretty much giving up on zombies, and zombies is only going to be attractive to, you know, the older players that remember when zombies first came out. You know, they want to go back and relive that awesome experience of grinding through those zombie waves with their friends. Zombies, you know, while, yeah, it's still popular, it's not as popular as Battle Royale right now.
Yeah, it is very interesting. And that transitions us to our next Battle Royale title, with CSGO going free-to-play and releasing Battle Royale. So this to me, and I believe this came out first before the Activision announcement, so CSGO going completely free-to-play, it kind of makes sense, John. It's been out for so long. I feel like with discounts, it brings it down to $4 or $5 on Steam anyway. Might as well make it free-to-play. But now adding a Battle Royale, the big thing with CSGO doing this, as opposed to some other developers, is the fact that CSGO already has such a huge following. We look at first-person shooters or third-person shooters, CSGO is definitely up there. Now you're adding a Battle Royale mode in. This is instead of something like, let's say, Battle Right, for example. It does not have a huge following, but it's trying to get one by adding Battle Royale in. I think this is a great move by CSGO.
Yeah, it's so smart. I mean, again, Battle Royale is the flavor of the year right now, and it's not showing any signs of slowing down whatsoever. Joey, I'm just waiting for a Pokemon Battle Royale. I'm waiting for, you know, everyone has a freaking Battle Royale. How many Battle Royale games do we need out there? Fortnite is king. PUBG is still holding strong, respectively, with all the issues they have had. CSGO is going to have what I would assume to be a pretty popular Battle Royale mode. I mean, CSGO is still a very popular title. You have the new Call of Duty Battle Royale mode that's doing incredibly well. How many more others do we need? I mean, when you take a look at a trend that has really picked up steam from day one and just kept going, it's Battle Royale mode. Is this thing ever going to slow down? Are we going to start seeing League of Legends pump out a Battle Royale mode? Dota pump out a Battle Royale? Are we going to see an Overwatch Battle Royale mode? It's just, it feels like it will never stop. How saturated can this market get before it's too saturated?
And I think the biggest thing is what is going to make them stand out. When you look at Call of Duty compared to PUBG, it does not feel like there are enough differences, in my opinion. Yeah, you added a helicopter, but it's OP as heck. Now, when you look at CSGO, though, they're adding a personal tablet in, which is going to be key to success. It's going to attract the opponent or track the opponent's positions as things happen. So I think every few moments, it's going to ping where people are. This, to me, makes it more interesting. It kind of reminds me of like the second Hunger Games, if you saw that movie. Like now there is something like every few minutes, it's going to ping where someone is. It's going to ping where care packages are coming down. So it's not only watching the map, but paying attention to when you should check your tablet, when you should find out where positions are, and then adapting to that. If you see someone ping in the top right corner, will they be there in a minute when the next ping comes down? How do you move in? So to me, it adds another layer of strategy, which is going to set it apart a bit. Fortnite developer Epic has announced the Epic Game Store, a Steam competitor looking to make some huge developer-friendly moves. John, this is big. We've seen more and more come out. So Steam, obviously the biggest one out there. Blizzard now making moves to become a marketplace. They added Destiny. They added Call of Duty. They're working that Activision partner or really owner since they're the same company now. I think that is a big move for Battle.net. Microsoft Store is vowing that they're going to redo themselves and where they're going to have more of an Xbox feel to them to make it more friendly for PC gamers. That's another big store out there. Now Epic. Epic, the developer of Fortnite. A huge game in and of itself. Their name has grown incredibly over the last year. Now they're coming in here and they're incentivizing developers to choose them over the rest. And they're doing this by giving developers 88% of the revenues while keeping only 12% for overhead. That is huge. When we look at every other game store out there, the average is about 30% to the store owner. So we're looking at almost a, what is it, 18% increase here, which is a ginormous amount when we see how much these games sell.
Yeah, and I think Epic Games is the perfect company to do this. That ability to say, hey, look, you're going to take 88% of your profit home with you. We're only going to keep 12%. That is for one reason and one reason only. That's the only reason why this deal even makes sense. It's because of the success of Fortnite. It's as plain as simple. It's a multi-billion dollar game. They make over $300 million a month in microtransactions. That's absolutely absurd. No other game does that. Fortnite does. They can afford to do something like this. Steam's going to be in trouble. This is huge. Steam pretty much had a monopoly on the game marketplace. It's like, oh, you want this game? You want that game? You want to play new indie games? You go to Steam. Now Epic Games is going, hey, look, we can do this too. And we're going to give an overhead here of 12% to ourselves and 88% to you, the developer. That's a heck of a deal. I don't know a single businessman in any industry that wouldn't be like, yeah, shake my hand right now. I want that deal. That is amazing. And it's going to take away from Steam. Steam's going to suffer. They're going to need to find a way to fight this off. Steam is in trouble, and a lot of other marketplaces may be in trouble too if this really does take off.
The other big thing here, John, is I think this is Epic thinking ahead. Fortnite is not going to last forever. At least we can assume it's not going to last forever. It's starting to teeter off a bit, and that's in comparison to everything else because it's still ginormously huge. But when you look at something like Fortnite, it's not going to be around forever. It might be, but it's going to decline. That's regardless. I think this is a move like we saw Netflix make a while ago. When Netflix was on the downturn because other people were popping up, you have Hulu, you have YouTube TV, et cetera, et cetera. Netflix started making their own content. They started developing their own store to find different ways to move forward. They stopped sending DVDs in the mail or they don't do it as prominently. It's all online now. They continue to develop and think one step ahead. This, to me, is Epic doing the same thing. They're trying to capitalize on the hype while Fortnite is still huge. And even if it doesn't go down, I think this is a good move for them because they're going to build on that hype. They're going to build on that excitement. They're going to capitalize by making new partners here And on top of that, that's going to allow their store to compete even if Fortnite decides to die out later down the road.
And the great thing I love about this article, it breaks down the revenue split between what Epic Games wants to do in their marketplace and what Steam does. Right now, Steam on the UE4 will split at 65-30 with 5% going to UE4. That's your revenue split. On the Unity side of Steam, that's a 70-30 split. You get 18% more profit for going to Epic Games, regardless if you're on UE4 or Unity. That is the way you do it. 18%, it sounds small. That is huge. Absolutely huge. 18% more tacked on to that. That's awesome.
Now, is UE4 Unreal Engine 4?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I figured it said for. Yeah, I mean, overall, the numbers are huge. And I think we are going to see Steam do something to combat this. I believe they are rolling out things for higher-level people. So maybe not your indie developers, but those high-level developers, your Destiny with Bungie, your... Bungie's not a great example. Yeah, anyway, huge developers. We know the big-name game developers. They're starting to give more and more cuts to them. I think where it's going to hit is indie, though. If you look at indie games... Do you want the market that Steam has already built up, or do you want the higher revenue that Epic can offer you? So that's really the bid. I don't think you automatically go Epic because of that. Steam already has so many more people playing it. And until you can really justify that, your marketing is still better on Steam, which is probably going to mean overall more success. Now, if you get out there and get more articles printed, you get more reviews done by other big sites, maybe you build up enough marketing to capitalize on the full 88%.
Yeah, and that's a very, very valid point. Is do you want to go to something new that doesn't have that dedicated user base, that doesn't already have multi-millions of people playing every month? You know for a fact, if you go to Steam, people are going to see your game. You're going to be on the store homepage sooner or later. You're going to be able to partake in the amazing Steam sales that they have. It's just a matter of time. People are going to see it. You know that. You don't know that with Epic Games yet. The only thing you know is they have a huge player base playing Fortnite, and they're trying something new. While the revenue does seem awesome, does that 18% really make up for that player base you know you're going to be able to advertise to and potentially pull a ton of players from? That is the big plus and minus these developers, especially indie developers, need to think about, because that is the difference between making and breaking your game or making and breaking your business.
Yeah, and it definitely comes down to the indies there. If you're a big title, you know the marketing's already going to be there. You probably want the higher percentage. If you're an indie, though, that extra marketability could be the difference maker here. So definitely something to consider for developers. I don't think it's set in stone which way they go, but 88% is hard to turn down regardless.
It is. I would take it in a heartbeat. Money talks.
Now, John, I know you're a huge CCG guy. You love electronic card games. If we are looking at another arena coming out here, $10 million for the Magic the Gathering Esports League kicking off in 2019, will you be taking your Hearthstone card talents to Magic?
So fun fact, back in the day, I was a huge Magic player. I love Magic. My number one argument against these virtual card games, I like holding the cards in my hand. There is something about being able to open a pack and seeing what you have and physically go through the cards. And you protect your cards and you put them in like these binders and you have all your cards. That's what really made these card games awesome for me. Yeah, it's old school. I like that. That is what really made those games awesome. Playing online on the computer, on your phone, that's great for people who just want to play, who really don't care. But there was something about buying those card packs, breaking them open, and physically holding those cards that I absolutely loved. Now, will I probably be watching this? Yeah, I probably will, because I still love Magic to this day. Am I happy that it's gone full digital? Probably not. But at the end of the day, it's still Magic. I still love the lore behind it. I love the gameplay. I love the style. It's something that I'm familiar with. Hearthstone just really, as much as I give it a lot of crap, it's a great game. A lot of people love it. The lore behind it's amazing. It just never really meshed with me. But Magic will do that, and I will be tuning in to watch the Magic the Gathering Arena Esports League for $10 million in 2019. And Joey, who knows? I might break out my black and blue deck, and I will just absolutely dominate. I heard black and blue is really weak nowadays, so I probably don't want to do that.
Black and blue, that reminds me of, what's that, the old Backstreet album? Backstreet Boys?
Oh, see, Joey, I'm not a Backstreet Boys.
Like a long, long time ago?
I don't follow Backstreet Boys. I wouldn't know that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I got that album for my sister for Christmas one year, like in the 90s.
There's the excuse.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't even remember the song I listened from them. It was that one hit, and that was about it. Another big issue, though, John. Let's talk South Korea, because they're going to be criminalizing boosting with a new law. This new measure, which was passed in June 2017, we are just hearing about it now over in the States. It's going to be developed in collaboration with the video game industry in the country of South Korea, and it will punish boosters with a fine of up to $20 million won, which is roughly $18,000. That is a lot of freaking money. Not only that, John, but even harder, they're going to get hit with a two-year suspension prison sentence as well, which is definitely worth a lot more than $18,000 up front. So this is big, John. This is Korea jumping into the esports market. They're already there, but now they're getting even more involved as a government. Personally, I like this in a sense. If you're going to capitalize on esports in society, I think there's one part where you decide to lead all of this to the leagues making their own decisions. And I'm hoping they had these conversations already with people like Riot Games, because now you're imposing extra sanctions. I think there needs to be that communication with the league. I do like the government getting involved and making this a bigger thing. At the same point, that communication has to be there.
Now, the other thing to remind yourself of and our listeners of the major differences between esports and gaming in the Western world versus Korea. Everything in Korea when it comes to gaming is tied to, if you're here in the United States, it's like it's tied to your social security number. It is a personal identification. It is tied to who you are. When there's a huge industry in Korea that's tied around this, and it's not just going pro, like you don't have to be the next Faker. You don't have to be. There's an amateur scene and everything. There's tons and tons of money on the line for amateur gamers in PC banks all over Korea. Account boosting in Korea, with it being tied to your social security number, if you will, would be like cheating on your taxes using someone else's social security number. Like filing taxes, claiming you're someone else. It's identity theft. That's essentially what it boils down to. And that's something that I feel like we forget a lot of times in the West here about those differences, that in Korea, that's exactly what it is. It's straight up identity theft. So, yeah, it doesn't surprise me that there's these legal consequences anymore. Well, yes, if you're on the pro level and you're doing this, you're going to get hit by the league, but you're also going to get hit by your own government. That, to me, makes complete sense. Just like if an NFL player is, accused of tax evasion, they're going to get hit by the league and they're going to get hit by the government. That makes sense to me. So this move doesn't really surprise me. In fact, I'm surprised it took till 2018 for this to really happen, but it doesn't really surprise me. And I feel like knowing that background, you can't really blame it when you realize it's tied to you as a person versus tied to you via a screen name that you can change, every 30 days or whatever.
The key here is, what do we define as boosting? Because it's been defined differently in multiple games over time. Some people look at it as account sharing, where I'm using, so I log in as the Fiasco account and I'm a higher rank and I level you up using that account.
Impossible.
Yeah, I see you laughing over there. Shut up over there.
Wouldn't happen.
You're not that much higher.
Wouldn't
oh,
happen.
Please. Now, there is another type of boosting, though, and you would be accused of this one. So in other games, it's been boosting where Clue is a platinum level player playing with a bronze level player and bringing him up to silver. Yes, that's not very high, so I don't think that's a highly accountable one. But if Clue were to carry you up to plat or maybe up to diamond, something like that, that's also considered boosting in some games. So to me, I don't know if I like the idea of that one being fined that heavily. I think if I'm using your account to bring you up, that's one thing. But if I'm just helping a friend out, if I'm just helping another player out, I don't know about that. I think that's a huge fine for that particular movement.
Hey, Joey, while you're there, can you pull that dagger you just stabbed me in the back with? That was very direct and brutal. I saw what you did.
I'm just saying, you want to throw some Iron 4 terms around here. We're going to have a little fun.
Hey, look,
but you know what I mean?
JJ is Iron 4, so there's nothing wrong with that.
But you know what I mean? That's
a
huge
right.
fine if I'm just helping a friend or whatever and I'm a higher ELO player.
Yeah, I think that's different, because I would make the argument that if a platinum player is pulling a bronze player up to platinum, especially in a game like League of Legends or Overwatch, that's really hard to do, because one player playing at a bronze level or maybe even a silver level isn't going to climb all the way up to diamond, to platinum, because they're going to hit a certain point, probably around gold, where they're going to be playing so bad that platinum player is not going to be able to carry hard enough to win those games. They're going to plateau. It's going to happen. That's the problem with these games, where it's like you can only carry a person so far, and it's not far enough to the point where it makes that big of a difference. Now, if you log on to a game through another person's account and you level it up, that is a huge issue. That is literally you not doing any of the work. You're not putting in any of the time. That's essentially a friend going to school, taking a math test for you under your name, using your ID card, saying, hey, yes, I'm so-and-so. I'm here to do this math exam. They get a 100 on it. You would have gotten a 60 on it because, you know, you suck at math. You know, so that's the problem. And I feel like that's the way they're going to go. Not boosting the sense of, oh, you want to play with your higher platinum friend. And let's be real here. These games have those built-in securities. I can't play with Clue on his main account because he is platinum and I'm a pathetic silver. That's already built in there. You know, can he?
So let me cut in. So the example is, for example, master level players playing with like silver level players. They'll end up making another account and then bringing them up as another silver level player, even though they're actually a master. So that's been more the platinum is not a good example in that comparison, mm-hmm. but think the highest tier level, like challenger or master, playing with someone who's bronze or silver at that same level on a different account.
No, you're
both of those
right.
have been fine before.
You're right. But we also have to remember that there's a built-in MMR system that's eventually going to catch up to them. And
oh, yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree.
I mean, I feel like these developers have done a lot to help combat smurfing. And that is a huge issue, and there's a huge issue for casual gamers and competitive gamers. No one likes it when a smurf is in your game and they're absolutely destroying low-level people. Even in World of Warcraft, people don't like it when higher level people come to the, you know, starter zones and just absolutely demolish entire cities based upon one AoE ability. Nobody likes that. It kills the game. It kills the fun. It's not fun. I hate it too. But at the same point in time, there's a difference between trying to do it in a competitive side where you're trying to win, trying to earn money, trying to earn your place, versus just playing for fun. I feel like that's where the line has to be is if you're just playing with friends, there's, you know, really nothing on the line. A lot of people really won't care too much. But at the end of the day, if you're playing in a competitive scene or you're trying to get better in competitive mode or ranked mode or whatever it is, that's where the issue is going to lie. If you're smurfing, I feel like that's going to be an issue. And then if you're openly account boosting, that's going to be an issue, whether it's a bronze teaming up with a platinum smurf and they're trying to go up. I feel like both of those players would be punished if it's doing it in a competitive mode, you know, for actual money or trying to get recognized. That's going to be the issue. If it's just for fun in normals or whatever, that I really don't see the issue with, which is why we even see these developers don't put those MMR blocks in, even in normals. You know, they'll try to even it out, but those blocks aren't there. They're only in ranked.
Yeah, I feel like neither are good, but I think we both agree that the one to be punished is the actual account sharing itself. The smurfing one, maybe you punish, but maybe not necessarily a huge fine for it. It would be something more as an in-game punishment. Maybe you get put in a different queue if they figure it out. Maybe they send you an email that says, hey, buddy, let's not do that anymore. I don't know, but I don't think it's worth 2 years in jail and $18,000 for just helping a friend out. A recent study proves that esports are more popular with girls than in boys between the ages of 13 to 15 in the UK. John, this is big because we've heard more and more that girls are not as involved in esports at the professional level. So where do we start them? We start them at the younger age, at a teenage. If younger girls are playing as teens, there's more possibility of them getting into professional leagues as adults or as, yeah, I guess they're adults after 18, so we'll call it adulthood. Market research company Kids Insights interview more than 5,000 young people. So again, not a huge survey size here, 5,000 between ages 4 and 18. For its quarterly look at the leisure habits of Britain's youth. This is coming out of, I believe it's The Guardian. Yes, it is. Despite the growing popularity of gaming among girls, there remains a large gender divide in how many children claim it as their favorite activity. For boys, it is second only to football, which in that case is soccer, with 14% of 4 to 12-year-olds and 21% of 13 to 18-year-olds saying it was their favorite activity compared to 3% of the girls. So, John, when we look overall, it's more and more girls starting to play. This is coming out of England in particular. Age of 16 to 18 viewing rates rise to almost a third of what boys have compared to girls in the 10% range. We're seeing more and more girls play video games and view esports. I don't think the comparison is that great among boys to girls. I think it's still pretty close. At the same point, with it even being closer to 50%, amongst the two in comparison with one another. I think that is a giant step forward for girls in esports, for girls in gaming, and I'm glad to see that more and more girls are participating.
It's great because there is this myth out there that girls don't game. Girls are not allowed to be gamers. There's this social stigma against girls playing video games. And God forbid they want to play competitive video games. That just doesn't make any sense, right? Society is telling you, no, you're a girl, you can't do this. You have these other gender-specified activities that you need to be doing. You can't do this. Leave this to the boys. That's wrong. It's 100% wrong. It's not even close. Girls can game. In fact, I was playing Overwatch the other day with this girl that literally led the entire team in DPS. In fact, if it wasn't for her, we would have never won the game. You know, that's the reality. And look, if there's one thing that I absolutely love about the gaming community, is it's genderless. No one cares what gender you are. No one cares what race you are, what religion you believe in, what your sexual orientation is. None of that matters, because when you log on, you're there to play a game. You're there to team up with people, with friends or strangers, for a common objective. No one cares. They just want to play, and as far as they're concerned, you're a part of the gaming community. But at the same time, we do have to recognize there are some discrepancies. The lack of female representation in esports, the lack of minority representation in esports. These are issues that a lot of traditional sport leagues and esport leagues are having to face with, you know. But at the end of the day, society needs to break those barriers themselves. We need to get past those social stigmas that girls can't play video games, that, you know, it's only a boy activity. We need to get past that, because like we're seeing here in England, it's not. Girls 13 to 15, it's right up there in their top 10. That's huge. That's great. In the next 10, 15 years, we're going to see hopefully a lot of pro female esport athletes coming out and demolishing their male counterparts. And we're going to be seeing, you know, female players on Fnatic, on Cloud9, on TSM, on Team Liquid. We're going to be able to get rid of these all female teams in their female league and have a truly co-ed, if you will, teams competing at the highest level, because they're capable of playing at the highest level, because regardless of your gender, you can game. That's the message.
And there's so much to unwrap there. I mean, overall, John, what you described online is a dream. I don't think either one of us have encountered that regularly. There are definitely people out there, once they discover someone is a girl, whether it be hearing them in voice chat, it becomes way crazier than it should.
Yeah.
We should focus on still capturing the objective. We should focus on still playing the game. We don't have to start flirting with the girl just because she's on the game. Like, there are so many people, so many matches I've seen people lose just because they get sidetracked at that point. And it's frustrating, not only for me as a player in the match, but for the girl as well. I mean, she's almost becoming antagonized just because she's using voice chat. Because she wants to communicate better with the team, in most cases, there are some girls out there that play it to their advantage. But overall, I want to believe she wants to play and communicate with the team. And just because she goes to that next step of using voice comms, the game gets turned on its head. So we need more and more maturity online. That's hard to say as the growing population is more and more younger boys out there. In particular, in the US, it feels like. Maybe UK does not have as much of a problem there. But overall, I think there's definitely room for us still to grow online. But yes, I think we're going to see more and more females on an esports scene as well. Like I said, John, if we're seeing more and more youth females play, I think there's a higher possibility of it at a professional level, especially when you compare it to sports. With sports, females and males have a much harder time playing together just because of the physical nature of our bodies. Men naturally are stronger in most senses. Now, that's just because of the build of the bodies. There are definitely females that can compete with that. We've seen it before on many stages, especially at the Olympics. But overall, it is much harder for a girl and a guy to compete at an athletic level in the same competition just because of the build of the bodies and the natural tendencies there. With gaming, it eliminates most of that. We all can have quick reflexes. It's not just a guy over girl thing or a girl over guy thing. And like with sports, you also see limberness, for example. Girls are technically more limber in certain situations, like gymnastics, they tend to perform better. But overall with gaming, that's all cut. And I can't emphasize that enough, because it allows for the scenes to be combined. And I absolutely love that factor. John, the Game Awards happened this past week. It was an exciting time. From what I've heard, and this is going off just Reddit and my friend group, most people don't watch for the awards. They watch for the new game trailers. How did you think?
Yeah, why not? I mean, there's only 18,000 different game awards out there. I feel like we just had another one like last week, and then there's like another one today, and there's, I don't know, it feels like there were like four this past weekend that happened. So yeah, why would you watch for these awards? In all honesty, if there were 18 different Academy Awards, if there were 15 different Grammys out there, if you're a country fan and there's 13 different versions of the CMAs, you're not going to care about the awards that much because it's all semantics. You're going to be there to watch for the performances or the album announcements, or in this case, the studio announcements and the game announcements and the title announcements. That's what you want to watch. That's what you're there for. The titles are just a popularity contest that a lot of people don't agree with. So why watch for the awards? You're going to watch to find out the next big game, the next game to be hyped about, and the next game to talk to your friends with on the school bus the next day.
Amen to that, brother. Regardless, we are going over the awards. I'll pretty much go through a list of them, John, and then we can jump on any if we want to, because overall, I think most of them fell the way people expected them to. Game of the Year, God of War from Sony Santa Monica and SIE. Best Ongoing Game, Fortnite from Epic Games. Best Game Direction, God of War from Sony Santa Monica. Best Narrative to Red Dead Redemption 2 from Rockstar Games. Best Art Direction, Return of Obra Dinn. That was actually not the one I picked. I'm actually not sure what that game is overall. So check that one out, guys, if you haven't played it. Best Score or Music, Red Dead Redemption 2. Best Audio Visual, Red Dead Redemption 2. Best Performance, Roger Clark as Arthur Morgan in Red Dead Redemption 2. Seems to be a theme here, John. Games for Impact, Celeste, Matt Makes Games. Best Independent Game, Celeste, Matt Makes Games. Best Mobile, Florence by Mountains and Annapurna Interactive. Best VR AR Game, Astrobot Rescue Mission from SIE Japan Studio. Best Action Game, Dead Cells by Motion Twin. Best Action Adventure Game, God of War from Sony Santa Monica. Best Role-Playing Game, Monster Hunter World from Capcom. Best Fighting Game, Dragon Ball Z, Arc System Works and Bandai Namco Entertainment. Best Family Game, Overcooked 2 by Ghost Town Games and Team 17. Best Strategy Game, Into the Breach from Subset Games. Best Sports Racing Game, once again, Forza Horizon seems to win it every year. Playground Games, Turn 10 Studios, and Microsoft Studios. Best Multiplayer Game, Fortnite by Epic Games, big surprise. Best Student Game, Combat 2018 from Inland Norway University of Applied Sciences in Norway. Best Debut Indie Game, winner The Messenger, Sabotage Studio. Best Esports Game, the winner is Overwatch. John, let's pause on this one for a minute. Do you pick Overwatch as the best esports game here, and do you do it just because they had Season 1 this past year?
So the argument I saw online, and I feel like there's a lot of great esports professionals out there that kind of put this one to bed. A lot of people are arguing Fortnite because of the popularity of the game. The Fortnite esports scene is pure hot garbage at the moment. It is completely unstructured. It has been an absolute disaster in every tournament it has been in, whether it was technical issues, confusing rules, rules that made no sense, the lack of play, the lack of anything, just all the pros turtling in place, hoping to get in the last 10 so they can get money. It was awful. Fortnite had zero chance. I don't think it should have been nominated, in all honesty. That's how bad Fortnite was. I don't get that. Now, I think the argument here is between Overwatch and League of Legends. League of Legends broke huge records this year in Worlds. It is still the most dominant esport title in the world, money-wise, viewership-wise, sponsorship-wise, and player-wise. Absolutely huge. Now, the issue is Overwatch is backed by Blizzard. Blizzard is a gigantic studio that has somehow managed to pull owners and investors from the NFL and other major sports organizations into it. The money going into Overwatch is obscene. Absolutely absurd, the amount of money going into Overwatch. The sponsorships, the production, everything about Overwatch is top class. Absolutely amazing. The issue is that enough to overcome the amazing numbers and continued strength of League of Legends? To me, the answer is no. League of Legends should have won this hands down. Yes, it's a dynasty. You're going to have to overthrow League of Legends. Overwatch's numbers started to decline. Then they plateaued, and that was an issue. League of Legends has been growing for the past 5 years in every tournament they have done around the world. That's the real winner going forward here.
Wow, John, I can't believe this. I'm going to disagree with you.
Really?
I am going to give best esports game to Overwatch because of the numbers they had in season one. The amount of money they were able to pull out of organizations coming in, you're asking for $15 to $30 million for 10 orgs to come into this. I mean, or 12 orgs. I don't even remember how many beginning it was. That's a lot of money. On top of that, you had a filled arena at your finals. You had great viewership numbers throughout. Yes, they're not League of Legends, but League has been around for 8 years. Overwatch, in its first year in the competitive scene, did incredibly well. Now, this is where I agree with you. For best esports event later on, I voted for the League of Legends World Championship. A lot of other award ceremonies have given it to the Overwatch League Grand Finals. That one, I think you give to League wholeheartedly. If you look at the viewership numbers, if you look at the in-person spectator numbers, League dominated throughout. They had over 200 million viewers overall. And yes, some of those were Chinese bots, but you cannot even compare to that. Between the events themselves, the World Championship wins it hands down. Out of 100 votes, I give it 99, if not 100. That, to me, is non-negotiable. But for the game itself, if we just look purely at the game, I think Overwatch had a very good year as far as esports.
Oh, and they did. And I'm not taking anything away from Overwatch. If this award was the best single year, the best opening year, then Overwatch wins hands down. I don't think there's been a single esport title that has had the impact that Overwatch has had in its first season, League included. League season one was rough. Worlds was held, I believe, not even at a convention center, but a ballroom in a hotel. That's how small it was. Overwatch was able to go straight into the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York, sell that bad bear out, and go from there. Yes, that's awesome. That's outstanding, but it doesn't check off all the boxes. I completely understand where you're coming from, Joey, and I agree with 99.9% of what you said, but my biggest issue is when you compare the two, the numbers don't add up. League of Legends overall, granted, yes, it does have the history because it's been around longer, is still going to be the one to win. If Overwatch can do this again next year and grow upon it, then yes, I would make the argument Overwatch should be the winner.
Okay, let's go into a few more here. Best esports player winner is Dominique Sonic Fox McLean. Great winner there from Echo Fox. Best esports team, this is another one I disagree with, and I'm wondering what your opinion is. Cloud9 for League of Legends wins it here. They would not be my first choice for their League of Legends team. So when you look at it, yes, they had a great year. I think one of the big things to look at is how bad they did and how well they were able to recover overall and go to the Final Four at Worlds. It's great. They did an excellent job. Don't get me wrong. At the same point, if I'm looking at the best team overall, not the best organization is Cloud9 hands down. But if you look at team overall, I think it goes to Astralis here. Astralis put on what very few teams have done before in CSGO. We've seen a few dominant performances where they've swept title after title after title, major after major after major. This is something Astralis did this year in CSGO. The amount of world-level titles they've won outnumbers Cloud9's League of Legends team by quite a bit, and the amount of accomplishment they had outnumbers it as well. Again, Cloud9, excellent organization. I would have given them Org of the Year, but if I look at individual teams, it's hard to count Astralis out here.
Joey, and this goes back to why people don't watch these awards for the awards themselves. Because as big of a Cloud9 fanboy as I am, I agree with you 100%. Cloud9's league team does not deserve this award. Did they have a fairy tale season? Yes. Did they go from 10th place to second place overall after the summer split to Final Four in Worlds? Yes, that's awesome. That's outstanding. But they didn't win. They didn't win the summer split. They didn't win Worlds. They didn't win anything in League of Legends. They just had a really good comeback story. Astralis kicked butt in CSGO. Hands down. I can't believe Astralis did not win this. It is a pure popularity contest, and I'm sorry, Cloud9's going to win a popularity contest with some of these other teams that were listed here. So, yeah, I feel like Astralis got the raw end of the deal here, and Cloud9 got it just because of how much it was hyped up in North America. That's the only reason they got it.
And I think a lot of it comes with the award show being based in North America as well. If this was based in Europe, I think these awards look completely differently. Same if it's in Korea or China. So overall, I think that plays into it. At the same point, I just want an equal award. So, John, I just want the right teams to win. And in my opinion, it is Astralis here. In fact, this might be controversial, but I would say League of Legends for Cloud9 was not even their best team this year. I personally would argue for their Rocket League team as the Cloud9 team of the year, to be honest.
And I would actually back that. They have been the most consistent out of any Cloud9 team. constantly winning, mid-season tournaments, whether it's the Rocket League, or in this case, they just won the entire Rocket League Championship Series. The first time in forever since a North American team, I think it was since season one, that a North American team won the Rocket League Championship Series. That's huge. And Rocket League is a huge game. It's so underrated in the esports scene. So, yeah, I completely agree. If you're going to take a look at Cloud9, it has to go to Rocket League in that sense and not their league team. You know, again, as much as a great story it was, they didn't win anything. At the end of the day, it's about winning. What'd you do for me lately? Your CSGO team won a Boston Major. Your Rocket League team is world champions. Your league team hasn't won a split since 2016.
And I think C9's Rocket League team also won the E-League Major as well after the World Championship. So they did incredibly well. I think a lot of credit to them. Astralis, for me, wins Team of the Year. But if you're looking at Cloud9, Rocket League did incredibly well. Best esports coach does go to Cloud9 with Reaper. I think we both agree on that one. He did an incredible job taking a team from last or very close to last all the way to the world's finals or semifinals is huge. So overall, that to me is a giant coaching experience. He definitely deserves the award there. Best esports event, we went over League of Legends World Championship. The esports host goes to Shox from EU's LCS. I think she deserves this one. I think there's a few other big names here. I was personally between voting for Golden Boy and Shox here. I think both of them have had incredible years, and I think it could have gone either way. Shock's definitely deserving of this award, in my opinion, though. Best esports moment, C9 with the comeback win in triple overtime versus FaZe, and that was in the E-League Boston Major, I believe. John, you and I both watched this one, I'm pretty sure, and it was incredible.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I screamed at a very high pitch when Cloud9 had that comeback in triple overtime. That was amazing. That was so much fun to watch. And I'm going to say this. Look, if you're trying to get somebody into esports, have them watch that triple overtime win for Cloud9 to win. That was just, it was such an amazing moment in the history of esports. It felt like the entire world was watching. Those viewership numbers spiked like absolute crazy. And I'm not talking like bot spiking. Absolutely spiked like crazy when it kept going into overtime. There was so much hype. We're talking League of Legends casters were watching when they were on the analyst desk, you know, in the NALCS. They even made a comment about it after Cloud9 won. Same thing in almost every other esport league in the world. Everyone was watching. That was one of those cool international moments that's going to make you think 5 years from now, where were you when that moment happened? Where were you when Cloud9 won the first major championship for an NA team? That's awesome. It's so cool. That was by far the best moment.
And honestly, the Boston Major is another event that was definitely up there because I can't remember who it was on the other side, but whoever Fnatic faced and lost to, that was another one that went triple overtime or double overtime. So incredible matches overall here in the Boston Major. Definitely one to check out. Last but not least, and I bet you can't guess this one, John, Content Creator of the Year.
Who does he go for? What was that one? Dr. Disrespect, right? Him.
Oh, close. No, nope. Ninja wins Ninja, this one, John.
Shocker. Who would have guessed? Who would have thought it was Ninja? Really?
On the cover of ESPN, the magazine, on Ellen, on multiple news channels. He's going to be streaming the New Year's Eve ball drop as well. Ninja has made a huge name for himself for gaming and esports overall this year, for Fortnite even as a game. Ninja is out there, and Ninja's doing incredible things. He wins this one hands down. And that will do it for our coverage of the awards, John. Because there are so many big game announcements, we're going to look over some of them for next week. We'll break down the ones we like the most because we can't go over all 30 to 40 of them on the show. But there were some great game announcements. I highly want to encourage you guys to check them out. The Outer Worlds especially looks really good. But we will break some of those down next week. For now, we're going to move into the Overwatch Winter Wonderland, which is launching very soon. John, what are your thoughts on this year's skins?
The skins going into the Overwatch Winter Wonderland event. First off, Blizzard continues to do an amazing job with content. They keep pushing out some of the best-looking skins, the best-looking content in almost any game out there. You're going to find it right there in Overwatch. Jeff Kaplan and his team on Overwatch have been doing absolutely nothing but spoiling Overwatch fans from day one of beta. It's so freaking awesome. So let's just quickly go over some of these skins here real quick. The one that was announced earlier today was Krampus Junkrat, which I freaking love. It fits Junkrat to a T, and I'm so pumped he has this Christmas skin. I think it or winter holiday skin. I think it looks amazing. Figure Skater Symmetra, I actually like this a lot. It's very eloquent. It's very unique. It's different, but it really fits Symmetra on every aspect here. I just think it looks amazing. Then everyone's favorite, Bastion, is getting a gift wrap skin. What do you want to find under your tree? Hopefully it's not an Omnic, because that would be terrifying. But in this case, it could be Bastion, and everyone loves Bastion. Everyone wants to be Bastion unless you're trying to nerf Bastion. In that case, you know, you don't love Bastion so much. I think that skin looks great on him. He's boxy, so it works. You have Biathlon Widowmaker. I love the play off of the Biathlon in the Olympics and some of the other winter events around the world. It looks great. She's the perfect one for it. God has this awesome pink tone onto it with the ski goggles, the pink vest and everything. It looks great. Again, there's not really a bad skin in here. Now, Joey, let's talk about my girl. I'm talking Sugar Plum Fairy Mercy, right?
Ooh.
I dropped money on that breast cancer skin for Mercy, and I absolutely love rocking that skin. Not just because of the message it sends, but because how awesome it looks and how unique it is. Sugar Plum Fairy Mercy, I will be dropping some serious time into Overwatch to get this skin. It looks incredible on Mercy, and I think it's going to look even better in-game when you're playing her. Then everyone's favorite DJ turned healer, Arctic Fox Lucio, is going full furry on us. He has got the ears, the tail, the everything. It's another great skin. Those are the skins so far that we have. Joey, I want your opinion on these skins. Which one's your favorite? Which one's your worst? And how soon are we going to be seeing you on the Blizzard client playing Overwatch?
Ooh, John, maybe later tonight. Overall, a lot of big, good skins out here. I don't know if we've ever had this good of a skin release for Overwatch, like as their first 5 to 6 skins we've shown. Usually there's a couple out there that are like, maybe not. Hopefully they have some other good ones in there. Overall, there's only one that I don't really like. Can you guess which one it is?
I am going to go with Junkrat.
Lucio. Really? I'm not a big fan of the Lucio skin. I like it, but I think it's the worst one out of the skin bunch so far for me, to be honest. It's not my favorite. Like, it's a little bushy. I kind of like it. I need to probably watch the video to see exactly what it looks like.
Bushy.
It's not doing it for me. Even with the video, it looks pretty and all, but nah, no thank you. So overall, that's the weakest one for me. I think it is better than his last year's winter skin, though. Krampus Junkrat. I love the fact they're expanding what they're looking at lore-wise. We're not only going winter, we're not only going Christmas, we're jumping out to the Krampus. That completely changes things. And they're capitalizing on a movie that came out, I believe, last year or the year before. So big move there from Overwatch. I think my favorite one has to be the Mercy skin, though.
Joey, no, I agree with you. I do think Lucio is the weaker skin of the group. And I feel like they struggle with skins for Lucio. He has his Ribbit skins, one of the first legendaries that came out for him. Those were great. But ever since that, they've really struggled with finding something unique for Lucio, for what he does, for his background that they've built, for his lore. I feel like they really struggled to find something to give him. I like it, but when you really compare it with the other skins we're going to get this event, my goodness, it does not even compete with, I would argue, a single one of them. It's absolutely awesome. I can't wait to play Overwatch. This event starts tomorrow. If you're watching live here on Twitch, we are recording on the 10th. This starts December 11th. That is Tuesday. If you're listening to this on the podcast when this comes out Wednesday, guess what? Update your client. Start playing right now. It is live.
Yeah, and I think the last thing to say is Blizzard has been on thin ice before with Symmetra skins as well. Now they're literally putting her on ice with the figure skater skin. So I really like that play as well, the fact we see something different coming out for her. And we've seen cosplayers play as Symmetra almost as an ice skater when they combine. I can't think of the cosplayer's name. We'll have to find it for people in the show notes. But she combined her Lucio skin with her Symmetra skin and put Symmetra on skates. So I think this could be an ode to her even in that sense.
You had to throw that pun in there.
Oh, you knew it was coming. Clue asked for it, practically.
Clue asked. Shout out to everyone in the chat on Twitch. Thank you for tuning in and being active throughout the show. It's been an absolute pleasure, as always. Well, Nation, that does it for another episode of the Level Up Podcast. But before you go, head on over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you will get exclusive access to content that nobody else in the world can get unless they are a part of the Overtime Network. If you enjoy listening to Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us a review on iTunes and Google Play, or even shoot us a comment on SoundCloud. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we love to hear from all of our listeners so much we have other ways for you to reach us. Joey, where else can the Level Up Nation go to interact with us and this show?
Listeners, head on over to Instagram, Twitter, and or Facebook and find us at the Level Up Podcast. That is the LVLUP Podcast. You can also chat with us on Discord at discord.me/OTN. And last but not least, we stream on the regular on Twitch, twitch.tv/OTN_live.
All right, make sure you tune in next week as we cover the latest and greatest in gaming and esports news. Do your ears a favor. Hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of the Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We will catch you all next week. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. And as always,
level up.
I need you to say the full title. I need to hear it from you, Joe. I need the full title coming out of your mouth.
Boy, I like some Sugar Plum Fairy Mercy.
That sounded so weird.